Ains gritted his teeth more than once when the wing leader has pulled me out of squad training because he has something infinitely more important for me to do. Which usually ends with me getting my ass handed to me repeatedly on the mat. But I have to say, he doesn't baby me like Dane, and he doesn't take it easy on me like Rhiannon does. He pushes me to my physical limit every session, but never further, usually leaving me in a boneless, sweaty heap on the sparring gym floor, gasping for breath. That's usually when Imogen reminds me that I'm needed in the weight room. I hate them both. Kind of. It's hard to argue with the results when I'm learning to take down the strongest fighter in the quadrant. I have yet to beat him, but I'm all right with that. It means he doesn't let me win. He also doesn't kiss me again, even when I push. March arrives with uncountable feet of snow that have to be shoveled before morning formation every day. And the moments the relic burns in my back and I feel like I might crawl out of my own skin if the power building within me doesn't release, reminds me that I still don't have a signet. It's already almost been 3 months. Every morning I wake up wondering if today is the day I'll spontaneously combust. Sharla Gunter, Captain Fitzgibbons reads from the death roll, his gloved hands slipping on the frozen parchment. It's warmer this week, but not by much. And Mushin Vedi, we commend their souls to Malik. Vedi? I ask Rhiannon, my eyebrows shooting up as formation ends. I didn't know him well since he was in second wing, but the name is still a shock, considering he was rumored to be one of the best among us. You didn't hear? She pulls her fur-lined cloak closer around her neck. His signet manifested in the middle of Carr's class yesterday, and he burst into flames. He burned himself to death? She nods. Tara said Carr thinks he was supposed to be able to wield fire, but it just overwhelmed him in that first rush and...
He went up like a torch, Riddick adds.
Kind of makes you glad your signet's still hiding, huh?
Hiding is one way to put it.
Other than the ability I'm not supposed to even whisper about, I'm proving to be the one thing my mother hates. Average. And it's not as though I can go to Tarn or Andarna for help. The signet is all about me, and I'm apparently not delivering, as the stinging relic on my back constantly reminds me. There's a tiny secret part of me that hopes my signet hasn't manifested yet, because it's different than the others. Not only useful, but meaningful, like Brennan's was.
Definitely makes me want to skip class today, Rhiannon mutters, blowing on her hands to keep them warm.
No skipping class, Dane admonishes, pinning us with a stare. We're weeks away from the squad battle, and we need every single one of you at your best to win.
Imogen snorts.
Come on, Atos. I think we all know Second Wing has that squad in tails section that's going to smoke the rest of us. Have you ever seen them sprint up the gauntlet? Pretty sure they've been out there even though it's still covered in ice.
We're going to win, Sienna, our executive officer, proclaims with a decisive nod.
Sorengale here might slow us down on the gauntlet, she wrinkles her hawkish nose, and probably in the wielding department, too. At the rate she's advancing.
Gee, thanks, I fold my arms across my chest. Bet I can shield better than all of them combined.
But Rhiannon's skills more than make up for that, Sienna continues. And we all know Liam and Heaton are both going to decimate on the mat for the challenge competition. That only leads flight maneuvers and whatever task the wing leaders come up with to judge this year.
Oh, is that all? Man, I thought it was going to be hard.
The sarcasm rolling off Riddick is thick enough to earn him a glare from Dane.
We're down to 10 of you, Dane says, glancing over our group. 12 of us in total, which puts us at a slight disadvantage against a couple other squads. But I think we'll manage.
We lost 2 of the new additions last week when the smaller one's signet manifested in battle brief,
and they both froze to death in seconds, nearly taking out Riddick with the exposure too. He was treated for frostbite but didn't have any permanent damage. Now Nadine and Liam are the only ones left from the batch we acquired after threshing.
But in order to manage, I need you guys to get to class.
He lifts his brows at me.
Especially you. A signet would be great, you know. If you can maybe make that happen.
It's as if he can't decide how to treat me lately. As the first year who's struggling but still here, or the girl he grew up with. I hate how unsettled everything feels between us. All wrongly sticky. Like putting on clothes before you can dry after a bath. But it's still Dane. At least he's finally being supportive.
She's going to miss Carr's class today, Zayden interrupts, appearing behind Sawyer, who hurries to clear a path. No, I'm not, I shake my head and ignore the quick jump of my pulse at the sight of him. She needs to go, Dane argues, then grits his teeth. I mean, unless the wing has more pressing matters for Cadet Sorengale. Her time is best spent developing her wielding skills.
I think we both know she's not going to manifest a signet in that room. She would have already if that was the key.
I wouldn't wish the look Zayden levels Dane with on my worst enemy. It's not anger or even indignation. No, he looks annoyed. As if Dane's complaints are entirely beneath him, which, according to our chain of command, they are.
And yes, the wing has more pressing matters for her. Sir, I'm just not comfortable with her going a day without at least practicing her wielding. And as her squad leader,
he doesn't know that Zayden's been giving me extra wielding sessions while we spar.
For Dune's sake, Zayden sighs, invoking the goddess of war.
He reaches into the pocket of his cloak and takes out a pocket watch, holding it in his outstretched palm.
Pick it up, Sorengale.
I glance at the two men and wish they'd just sort their shit out between themselves, but there's about a 0% chance of that happening. For the sake of expediency, I throw my mental feet into the floor of the archives. White-hot power flows around me, raising goosebumps on my arms and lifting the hair at the back of my neck. Raising my right hand, I envision that power twining between my fingers, and little shocks blossom along my skin as I give form to the energy, making it a hand of its own, as I ask it to stretch the few feet that separate me from Zayden. There's an abrupt halt, as though my tendrils of raw magic hit a wall. But then, it gives. And I push forward, keeping tight control of the blazing hand. There's a crackle in my head, like the dying embers of a fire, as my power brushes Zayden's hand, but I close my mental fist around the pocket watch and then pull. It's fucking heavy. You got this, Rhiannon urges. Let her concentrate, Sawyer chides. The watch plummets for the ground, but I snap my hand back, yanking on my power as though it's a rope. And the watch flies toward me. I catch it with my left hand before it can smack me in the face. Rhiannon and Riddick clap. Zayden walks forward and plucks the watch from my fingers, dropping it into his cloak.
See? She's practiced. Now we have things to do.
He puts his hand on the small of my back and leads me out of the crowd. Where are we going? I loathe the way my body demands I lean back into his touch. But I miss it the second it's gone.
I'm assuming you're not wearing flight leathers under that cloak.
He opens the door to the dormitory for me and I walk inside. The motion is so easy that I know it's not only practiced, but second nature, which is at complete odds with, well, everything I've come to know about him. I pause, looking at him like we're meeting for the first time.
What?
He asks. Closing the door behind us and shutting out the blustering cold.
You opened the door for me. Old habits die hard, he shrugs. My father taught me that.
His voice dies abruptly, and his gaze falls away, every muscle in his body locking as though he's preparing for an attack.
My heart aches at the look that crosses his face, recognizing it well. Grief.
Don't you think it's a little cold for flying? I ask, changing the subject in an attempt to help. The pain in his eyes is the kind that never dies, the kind that rises like an unpredictable tide and floods the shoreline without mercy. He blinks, and it's gone.
I'll wait here. I nod and hurry to change into the fur-lined leathers we're issued for winter flight. He has that unreadable mask on when I return, and I know there won't be any more doors held on my account today.
We walk out across the emptying courtyard as cadets scurry off to classes. You didn't answer me.
About what?
He keeps his eyes on the gate to the flight field path, and I have to damn near scurry to keep up with his strides.
About it being cold for flight.
Third years have flight field this afternoon. Kaori and the other professors are just taking it easy on you guys since the squad battle is coming up, and they know you need the practice in wielding.
He pushes open the gate, and I hurry after him.
But I don't need the practice?
My voice echoes in the tunnel.
Winning the squad battle is nothing in the scheme of keeping you alive. You'll be on the front lines before the rest of them come next year.
The mage lights play off the harsh angles of his face, casting sinister shadows as we pass each one.
Is that what's going to happen next year? I ask as we come out the other side,
the snow whiting out my vision momentarily. It's piled high on each side of the path, the result of this heavy winter.
I'm going to the front lines?
Inevitably. There's no telling how long Sigale and Taryn will tolerate being separated. My best guess is that we'll both have to sacrifice to keep them happy.
He's clearly not so happy about it himself, but I can't blame him. After 3 years in the quadrant, I'd want to get the hell out too. My stomach sinks as I realize I'll be in his shoes when I graduate as well, with no real control on how our dragon's bond dictates my future posts.
I nod, not knowing what else to say, and we walk to the gauntlet in companionable silence.
Second wing, I note, watching the squad from tail section slip and slide their way across the gauntlet.
You sure you don't want your own squads out here practicing?
A corner of his mouth lifts, and that inhuman facade of his cracks.
When I was a first year, I thought winning was the pinnacle too.
But once you're in your third year and you see the things that we do, his jaw flexes. Let's just say that the games are a lot more lethal.
We head toward the staircase that leads to the flight field, but there's already a group coming down, so I move back to let them descend first. My heart launches into my throat as they come closer, and I snap my frame to an attention stance, my spine stiffening. It's Commandant Panchek and Colonel Atos. Reaching the ground first, Dane's dad offers me a smile.
At ease. You're looking well, Violet. Nice flight lines, he says, gesturing to the ones on his own cheekbones that come from flight goggles. You must be getting a lot of airtime.
Thank you, sir. I am. I relax my posture and can't help but return the favor, but my lips are tight.
Dane is doing well, too. He's my squad leader this year.
He's told me,
he grins, his brown eyes just as warm as Dane's.
Mira asked about you while we were touring the Southern Wing last month. Don't worry, you'll get your letter privileges in second year, and then you can keep in touch more often. I'm sure you miss her.
Every day, I nod, pushing past the swell of emotion the admission brings. It's so much easier to pretend there's nothing outside the walls than to wallow in how much I miss my sister.
Zayden stiffens at my side as Mom steps out of the stairwell.
Oh, shit.
Mom, I blurt, and her head turns, her eyes meeting mine. It's been more than 5 months since I've seen her, and even though I want to be as composed as she is, as compartmentalized, I just can't. I'm not built like she is, like Mira is. I'm my father's daughter.
Her assessing gaze sweeps over me with all the familiarity of a commanding general and a Basgaiath cadet, and there's no warmth in her expression as she finishes her perusal.
I hear you're having trouble wielding.
I blink and step backward, as though physical distance is going to shelter me from the icy rebuke.
I have the best shields in my year.
For the first time, I'm actually glad I haven't manifested a signet, haven't given her something to brag about.
With a dragon like Tern, I would certainly hope so.
She cocks an eyebrow.
If not, all of that incredible, enviable power will have been...
Her sigh is a puff of steam in the air.
Squandered.
I try my best to swallow the growing knot in my throat.
Yes, General. You have been the topic of some conversation, though.
Her gaze skims the top of my head, and I know she's looking at the silver-tipped braid she thinks marks me as cursed, the hair she told me I was better off cutting.
Oh? She actually talks about me?
We're all wondering what powers, if any, you're wielding from the golden dragon. Her lips form a smile I'm sure she thinks is soft, but I know her too well to fall for it.
No.
The single word from Tern rumbles through my entire body.
Do not speak of it.
Nothing yet. I drag my tongue over my chapped lower lip. Winter is hell on the skin during flight. And Darna told me that feathertails are known for being unable to channel power to their rider. Only their direct gifts, but I'm not about to say that. It's why they don't bond often.
Or ever, Dane's dad chimes in. We were actually hoping that you might ask your dragon to allow us to study her. For purely academic purposes, of course.
My stomach sours. The group of them would poke and prod Aunt Darna for God's knows how long to appease their academic curiosity. And they might stumble onto the untapped power of young dragons.
No thank you.
Unfortunately, I don't see her being comfortable with that. She's pretty private, even with me.
Pity, Colonel Atos says. We've had the scribes on it since threshing, and the only reference they can find in the archives about the power of feathertails is hundreds of years old, which is funny because I remember your father doing a bit of research about the second Grovelin uprising, and he mentioned something about feathertails, but we can't seem to find that tome. He scratches his forehead.
Mom looks at me with expectation, as though to ask me without actually asking. I don't believe he finished his research on that particular historical event before he died, Colonel Atos. I couldn't even tell you where his notes are. The words are as true as I can make them. I know exactly where his notes are, in the one location he spent the majority of his after-hours time. But there's something about Tern's warning that makes me simply unable to tell them.
Too bad. Mom forces another smile. Glad to see you're alive, Cadet Sorengale.
Her gaze flashes sideways and instantly hardens to steel.
Even if the company you're forced to keep is more than questionable.
Shit, shit, shit. I can't step in front of Zayden and make him look weak. I can't even glance his way without telling my mother where my allegiance lies, without telling myself.
I always felt that we resolved any of those questions years ago, Zayden says, his voice low, but he's gone taut as a bowstring next to me.
Mom turns toward the Citadel in clear dismissal.
Do see if you can master some kind of signet, Cadet Sorengale. You have a legacy to live up to.
Yes, General. The informal words cost more than I'm prepared to admit, ripping into the confidence it's taken me nearly 8 months to build with talon-sharp precision.
Good to see you, Violet. Dane's dad offers me a sympathetic smile, and Pancheck outright ignores us, running to catch up with Mom.
I don't say a word to Zayden before I climb the stairs, each step making me only angrier until I'm a ball of rage by the time I reach the top of the cliffside.
You didn't tell her about how you got out of the attack in your bedroom, he says.
It's a statement, not a question.
And I'm not talking about me showing up.
I know exactly what he's talking about.
I don't ever see her. And you told me not to tell anyone.
Didn't realize it was quite like that between you,
Zayden says, his tone surprisingly soft as we start down the box canyon toward the flight field.
Oh, that's nothing, I toss out, intentionally making my tone as flippant as possible. She spent almost an entire year ignoring me when Dad died.
A self-deprecating laugh slips past my lips, which was almost as wholesome as the years she spent barely tolerating my existence because I wasn't perfect like Brennan or a warrior like Mira.
I shouldn't be saying these things. These are the thoughts families keep behind their doors so they can wear their polished, perfect reputations like armor when in public.
She doesn't know you very well then,
Zayden remarks, keeping pace with my furious strides. I scoff. Or she sees right through me. Problem is, I'm never quite sure which it is. I'm too busy trying to live up to whatever impossible standard she sets to ask myself if they're even standards I give a shit about. My narrowed gaze swings to him. And what was that about, anyway? Saying that you resolved questions years ago?
Just reminding her that I paid the price for my loyalty.
His brow furrows, but he stares ahead of us.
Paid what price?
The question slips out before I can stop my foolish tongue. I can't help but remember what Dane said. That Zayden has reasons to never forgive my mother.
Boundaries, violence.
His head lowers for the span of a heartbeat. And when it rises, he's wearing that polished, give-no-fucks mask he's so good at donning. Lucky for us, the strain of the moment is broken as Taryn and Sigale land across the field ahead, accompanied by a shiny, smaller dragon who makes me instantly smile.
We're all flying today? I ask, following as he walks toward the trio.
We're all learning today. You need to learn how to stay on, and I need to learn why the hell it's so hard for you, he answers. And Darna needs to learn how to keep up. Taryn needs to learn how to share his space in a tighter flight formation. And every other dragon but Sigale is too scared to fly closer. Taryn chuffs in agreement as we approach.
And what is Sigale learning? I ask, eyeing the giant blue dragon.
Zayden grins.
She's been leading for almost 3 years now. She's going to have to learn how to follow, or at least practice.
Taryn's chuff sounds suspiciously like a laugh, and she snaps at him, baring her teeth and coming within inches of his neck.
Dragon relationships are absolutely incomprehensible, I murmur.
Yeah? You should try a human one sometime.
Just as vicious, but less fire. He mounts with an ease I envy.
Now let's go.
Chapter 25. A quote from page 77, The Book of Brennan. The squad battle is more important than the wing leaders will let on. They like to joke that it's a game, that it's just bragging rights for the squad leaders and the winning squad. But it's not. They're all watching. The commandant, the professors, the commanding officers. They're watching to see who will rise to the top. They're salivating to see who will fall.
Tap out!
Rhiannon screams as a rider out of the second wing fights to drag himself forward on the mat, his hands splayed wide, his fingernails digging in as Liam holds him in a leg lock, forcing his back into what should be an impossible arch. My heart pounds as the excitement of today's matches reaches a fever pitch. It's the last challenge of this portion of the squad battle, and the crowd pushes at our backs, forcing me to continuously struggle not to fall over onto the mat. After two events, we're in 7th out of 24 on the leaderboard, but if Liam wins, we'll jump to 3rd. My flight time in the Gauntlet Sky Race was the slowest in our squad, but that's because I kept forcing Taryn to release his magical hold on me. And then we'd lose precious seconds while he had to dip to catch me and toss me back in the saddle, over and over and over again. I swear the bruises on my ass from landing in the hard divot hurt less than Taryn's scoff that I'd humiliated his entire family line as we crossed the finish line last. Mikhail cries out in pain, the sound sharp, near ear-splitting, and pulling my attention back to the action in front of me. Liam holds fast and presses his advantage. Fuck me, that looks like it hurts, I mutter over the cheering first years.
Yeah, he's not walking for a while, Riddick agrees, cringing as the arc of Mikhail's back looks like a broken spine waiting to happen.
With another cry, Mikhail slams his palm into the mat 3 times, and the crowd roars.
Yes! Go, Liam!
Sawyer screams from behind me, and Liam drops Mikhail to the mat where he sprawls out, exhausted.
We won!
Liam rushes for us, and I'm swept up into a tangle of arms and shouting and joyous squadmates. I'm pretty sure I even see Imogen in this little melee. But I don't see Dane. Where the hell is Dane? He would never miss this.
Your winner, Professor Emeterio shouts, his voice ringing through the gym and quieting the zealous energy as Liam steps out of our crushing hug. Liam Mari from 2nd Squad, Flame Section, 4th Wing.
Liam puts up both hands in victory and turns in a small circle, and the sound of cheering makes my ears ring in the best way. Commandant Pancheck steps onto the mat, and Liam joins the rest of our squad, sweat pouring off his skin.
I know you were all expecting the last portion of the squad battle to happen tomorrow, but the cadre and I have a surprise.
He has every single rider's attention now.
Instead of telling you what the final unknown task will be, and giving you tonight to plan for it, your final task will begin this hour.
He grins, throwing out his hands and turning just like Liam had.
Tonight?
Riddick whispers. My stomach hits the ground. Dane isn't here. Neither is Sienna.
Oh, shit, Imogen whispers, looking over the crowd herself. As you may have noticed, your squad leaders and their executive officers have been, shall we say, sequestered with your section leaders and wing leaders, and no, before someone asks, your task is not to find them.
He continues to walk in a small circle, addressing each side of the mat.
You are to break into your squads and accomplish a unique mission this evening without the leadership and instruction of your squad leaders.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of having squad leaders?
Someone asks across the mat.
The purpose of a squad leader is to form a tightly knit unit that can carry on with a mission after their demise. Consider your leaders demised.
Pancheck shrugs with a gleeful smile.
You're on your own, riders. Your mission is simple. Find and acquire, by any means necessary, the one thing that would be most advantageous to our enemies regarding the war effort. Leadership will serve as unbiased judges, and the winning squad will be awarded 60 points.
That's enough to put us into first, Rhiannon whispers, linking her arm with mine.
We could win the glory of going to the front.
What are the boundaries? Someone to the right asks.
Anything within the walls of Besgaeth, Pancheck answers. And don't you dare let me see you trying to haul a dragon back here. They'll incinerate you out of sheer annoyance.
The squad to our left mutters their disappointment.
You have?
Pancheck pulls out his pocket watch.
3 hours, at which time we'll expect you to present your stolen treasures in the battle brief room.
We all stare at him in silence. Out of everything I imagined the third and final task to be, well, this wasn't anywhere near that list.
What are you waiting for? Pancheck shoos his hands at us. Go!
Pandemonium ensues. This is what happens when you remove our leadership.
We're a hot freaking mess. 2nd Squad, Imogen yells, putting her hands up. Follow me!
Sawyer and Heaton make sure we're all ducklings, following in Imogen's wake as she leads us across the gym to the weight room.
You did great, I tell Liam as he walks at my side, still struggling to catch his breath. It was epic, Riddick hands Liam a water skin, which Liam promptly drains.
Let's go, Imogen says, ushering us through the open door.
She does a quick head count and then closes the door, wielding to lock it. I find a seat on one of the benches, flanked by Rhiannon and Liam.
First thing, who wants to be in command? Imogen asks, looking at the ten of us.
Riddick throws his hand in the air. Rhiannon turns and forces it back down.
No, she shakes her head. You'll turn this into some kind of prank.
Fair point, he shrugs.
Liam?
Quinn asks, lifting her eyebrows. No, he shakes his head, but his gaze darts in my direction, giving his reasoning away.
No one is going to try and off me while we're out tonight, I argue.
He turns back toward Imogen and shakes his head one more time. Of course she nods. They're both on Team Zayden.
You keep command, Rhiannon suggests, looking at Imogen. You've gotten us this far.
A murmur of agreement goes around the room.
Emery, Heaton, Imogen asks. As third years, it's your right.
No thanks, Heaton leans back against the wall. Nope, there's a reason neither of us wanted to be in leadership, Emery adds, sitting next to Nadine.
Any reason you wouldn't be all right following Imogen's command for a few hours, Nadine?
Every one of us turns to face the first year, who hasn't been remotely subtle about her hatred of marked ones. Knowing now that she's from a northern village on the border of the provinces of Deaconshire and Tirindor, I can see her reasoning. I just don't agree with it, hence why I'm not exactly friendly with her. She visibly swallows, her nervous gaze skittering over all of us.
I'm fine with it.
Good, Imogen folds her arms across her chest, the wrist with her rebellion relic peeking out from under her tunic.
We have a little less than 3 hours. What are your ideas?
What about a piece of weaponry? Riddick suggests. A crossbolt would be deadly to any of our dragons in the hands of our enemies.
Too big,
Quinn says decisively. There's only one in the museum, and honestly, it's not even the bolt that's deadly, it's the launching system.
Next, Imogen glances at each of us.
We could steal Panchek's underwear.
Riddick starts before Rhiannon slams her hand over his mouth.
And that's why we don't let you lead,
she arches a brow at him.
Come on, guys, think. What's the most useful thing to our enemy?
Imogen's brow puckers over her pale green eyes.
Information,
Liam answers. He swings his gaze toward me.
Violet, what about stealing the news missives from the archives? The ones that come in from the front.
I shake my head. It's after 7. The archives are locked. And it's the kind of vault that even wielding isn't going to touch. The whole room is sealed up airtight in case of fire.
Damn, Imogen sighs. That was a good one.
The entire room breaks into conversation, each voice louder than the next as suggestions are hurled into the open.
Information.
My stomach twists as an idea takes form. It would be a showstopper, something no one else could compare to. But, I shake my head, it's too risky.
What are you thinking, Sorengale? Imogen asks, and the room falls silent. I can see the little gears turning in your mind.
It's probably nothing, I glance at the members of our squad. But is it nothing?
Get up here and work it out in your head, Imogen orders.
Seriously, it's mad, like undoable. We'd get thrown in the brig if we're caught. I snap my mouth shut before I say anything more. But it's too late. Imogen's eyes are sparkling with interest.
Get up here and work it out,
she orders, making sure I know it's not a suggestion.
We can wield, right?
I stand, brushing my hands down my side and the hilts of the 6 daggers sheathed there.
By all means necessary, Heaton repeats, nodding.
All right. I rock back on my heels, letting my mind whirl through a plan. I know Riddick can wield ice. Rhiannon can retrieve. Sawyer can manipulate metal. Imogen can mind wipe recent memories. And I'm fast, she adds.
Something she has in common with Zayden.
Heaton, what about you? I ask.
I can breathe underwater, they answer.
I blink.
Awesome. but I don't think that's going to come in handy if we do this, Emery.
I can control wind, he grins. A lot of wind.
All right, that one could be defensively useful, but not quite what I'm looking for. My boots squeak on the floor as I turn to face her. Quinn?
I can astral project, keep my body in one place, and then walk around somewhere else.
My mouth hangs open, matching about half the squad.
I know, it's pretty awesome,
she winks, pulling her curls up into a bun.
Yes! That we can use!
My head bobs as I parcel through the easiest way to do this.
What are you thinking, Sorengale?
Imogen prompts, tucking the short hair on one side of her shaved head behind her ear.
You're going to tell me I've lost my mind, but if we pull it off, we'll win for sure.
I might not be enough like my mother to win her approval, but I know where she keeps the most valuable information.
And?
We're going to break into my mother's office.
You are so fucking creepy, Riddick squirms 2 hours later, leaning away from Quinn. Well, from Quinn's astral form.
Her body is currently with Heaton, guarded in the weight room. The rest of us are sneaking through the hallways past the healer quadrant. We've already run into a squad from second and another from third, but none of us had time to question or deter the others. We'll rise or fall on our own merit with this timeline,
and we've wasted the last 2 hours waiting for night to fall, so it would even be possible.
I've never been farther than this, Emery says as we pass the last door to the clinic.
You've never even been to the archives? Imogen asks.
I avoid that duty like the plague, Emery answers. Scribes freak me out. Quiet little know-it-alls acting like they can make or break someone by writing something down.
I grin. There's more truth to that statement than most people realize.
Infantry is still out camping.
Rhiannon points out the windows to the dozens of campfires illuminating the field below.
Must be nice to get a break, Nadine remarks, but there's no snotty tone I've come to expect. Just the same exhaustion I think we all feel.
Scribes will all go home for the summer. Healers get to spend their weekends on those mind-body health retreats, and the infantry might have to practice making and breaking camp in the snow through winter. But at least they spend those months around a campfire.
We'll get to go home, Imogen argues.
After graduation, Rhiannon retorts, for what, a couple of days? We come to a fork in the path where we can follow the tunnel down to the archives or climb into the fortress of the War College.
There's no turning back from here, I say to the group, looking up the spiral staircase I've climbed so many times that I know each step by heart.
Lead on,
Quinn orders, and we all jump about a foot in the air.
Shh, Imogen hisses.
Some of us can get caught, you know.
Right, sorry,
Quinn cringes.
Everyone, remember the plan, I whisper. No one deviates, no one.
They all nod, and we begin our silent climb up the dark stairs, then cling to the shadows as we cross the stone courtyard of Besgaeth.
Sure could use Zayden right about now.
You're doing great,
Andarna assures me in the happiest of tones. I swear nothing bothers her. She's the most fearless kid I've ever met, and I grew up with Mira.
It's 6 flights straight up,
I whisper when we reach the next set of stairs, and we continue to climb as fast as we can without making any noise. Anxiety spikes, and my power rises in response, the relic in my back heating to an uncomfortable burn. It's always there lately, simmering beneath my skin, reminding me that performing lesser magics isn't going to be enough to vent it if I don't manifest a signet soon. Eventually, we reach the top of the steps, and Liam leans out just far enough to see down the length of what's always felt like the world's longest hallway.
There are mage lights in sconces, he whispers, and you are right.
He withdraws into the safety of the stairwell.
There's only one guard stationed at the door.
Was there any light under the door? I ask quietly. My heart sounds like it's loud enough for the whole college to hear. Even the infantry cadets sleeping hundreds of feet below us.
Nope, he turns to Quinn. The guard looks about 6 feet tall, but he seems pretty athletic. The other stairwell is down the hallway to the left, which means you'll have to get his attention and then book it.
Quinn nods.
No problem. Everyone else know what they're doing? I ask. There are 8 nods.
Then let's do this. Quinn, you're up. Everyone else, circle back down so he can't see us if he looks this way.
I can't believe we're actually about to do this. If she catches us, there won't be any mercy. It's not in her nature.
We retreat, and Quinn charges up the stairs. Her voice is muffled by the stone walls, but we hear the guard's pounding footsteps clear as day as he charges past the stairway.
Get back here! You can't be here!
Now! Imogen orders. We launch, leaving Rhiannon and Emery in the stairwell as we fly into the hallway. Sawyer rushes toward the opposite staircase, throwing the door shut and twisting the metal joints with his powers as we bolt down the hall. I've never run this fast in my life, and Nadine is already at the door, trying to unweave whatever wards my mother has used. Liam steps into the spot where the guard stood and lifts his chin in the air, taking the same posture.
Are you all right?
Yep, I answer, my chest heaving as Imogen steps in to help Nadine. Nadine's signet is the ability to unweave wards, which I never thought would come in this handy. Riders are always out there building the wards, keeping the shields up around Navarre. Then again, not many riders try to break into the commanding general's office.
And I'll be fine in there, I assure him, a smile tugging at my lips, which is funny since I didn't think the same way the last time I was standing here.
Got it, Nadine whispers, nudging the door open.
If you hear me whistle, Liam starts, worry lining his forehead.
We'll go out the window or something, I assure him as Riddick and Sawyer rush past.
Relax!
Leaving Liam to stand watch, I join the others in Mom's office.
Don't touch the mage lights or she'll know, I warn them. You have to make your own.
I flick my wrist, twisting my power into a bright blue flame and letting it drift over me. It's one of the things I'm actually good at.
How nice is this?
Riddick flops down onto the red couch.
We don't have time for you to be...
You, Sawyer lectures, heading for the bookcase. Help me search for something useful.
We'll take the table,
Imogen and Nadine start sorting through the papers on the 6-seater conference table.
Which leaves me and the desk, I mutter, walking around the intimidating piece of furniture and praying I don't trigger any wards she's set.
There are 3 folded missives in the middle, and I pick up the first, revealing a sharp dagger with an alloy-infused hilt, and what looks to be a tearish rune in the handle that she must be using as a letter opener or something. I unfold the letter with as much care as I can.
General Sorengale, the raids around Athbine have spread the wing too thin. Being posted beyond the safety of the wards comes with considerable hazards, and though I am loath to request reinforcements, I must. If we do not reinforce the post, we may be forced to abandon it. We are protecting Navarian citizens with life, limb, and wing. But I cannot adequately relay how dire the situation is here. I know you receive the dailies from our scribe attachment. But I would be remiss in my duties as executive officer of the Southern Wing if I did not write to you personally. Please, find us reinforcements. Sincerely, Major Callista Nima.
I breathe past the ache that erupts in my chest at the plea in her letter. We've discussed nearly daily attacks in battle brief, but nothing on that scale.
Maybe they don't want to scare us.
But if it's that terrifying out there, we have every right to know. We'll likely be called into service before we graduate, maybe even this year.
These are all numbers, Imogen says,
rifling through the conference table papers.
It's April,
I say, reaching for the next missive. She's working on next year's budget. Everyone stops and turns to look at me, all wearing expressions of varying degrees of disbelief.
What?
I shrug.
Did you think this place ran itself?
Keep looking, Imogen orders. I unfold the next missive.
General Sorengale, protests regarding conscription laws are growing within the province of Tirindor. Knowing that due to Tirindor's size, it provides the majority of our conscripts to replenish our front lines, we cannot afford to lose the support of the people again. Perhaps an influx of defensive spending on outposts here would not only bolster the province's economy and remind the Tirish how needed they are to the defense of our kingdom, but also
ease the unrest. Please consider this solution as an alternative to suppressing the unrest with force. Sincerely, Lieutenant Colonel Alyssa Trevant.
What the hell?
I closed the letter and put it back on Mom's desk. Then turned to the giant map hanging on the wall directly above me. Unrest isn't new to Tirindor, nor is the sentiment against conscription, but we certainly haven't heard any political rumblings in Battle Brief. Other than to quell discontent, it would make no sense to increase defensive spending there, especially since it holds our fewest number of outposts due to the natural barrier provided by the Cliffs of Draelor, which are unscalable by griffins. Tirindor should already be one of the safest provinces on the continent. Well, except Aracia. Where that capital should be, there is only a scorch mark, as though the burning of the city has singed the map as well. I study the map for precious seconds, noting the battlement markers dotted along the countryside. Logically, there are more outposts along our more active border zones and, according to this map, more troops in those locations. It shows all of Navarre, Krovla to the south, Breivik, and Signeson to the southeast, and even the barriers of the Barrens, the ruined deserted lands at the southern tip of the continent. It also shows each of our outposts and supply routes within Navarre. A slow grin spreads across my face. Hey, Second Squad, I know what we need to steal. It takes a matter of minutes for us to haul the map down and cut it away from its frame, then another to roll it, securing it with leather ties Imogen pulls out of her satchel. Liam whistles, and my heart nearly leaps out of my chest. Shit! Riddick races to the door and cracks it open as we all prepare to flee. What's going on out there? He's pounding at the hall door. It's going to give any second. We have to go now, Liam whisper shouts, holding the door open as we all race into the hallway. The map is too big for one person to carry, and Sawyer and Imogen struggle through the doorway as the guard kicks in the door further down the hall. My stomach hits the floor, and panic threatens to overwhelm logical thought. And we're fucked, Nadine announces. What the hell do you think you're doing? The guard shouts, charging toward us. We're dead if he catches us with the map, Riddick bounces on his toes like he's preparing to fight. On any given day, I'd argue that riders are the superior fighters. We have to be. But that Besgaeth guard might just give us a run for our money. We can't hurt him, I protest. The guard barrels past the first stairwell, and Rhiannon steps into the middle of the hallway, her arms outstretched. Please work, please work, please work, Imogen chants. The map disappears out of her hands and reappears down the hallway in Rhiannon's. I barely have time to register that it worked as the guard stumbles, but he keeps running. Any closer and he'll see my face. This was not a part of the plan, Liam moves to my side. Adapt, Emery! Imogen hisses and the third year steps to the front of our little raiding party. I'm so sorry, man. He holds out his hands and pushes. A torrent of air rushes down the hallway, ripping tapestries from the walls and knocking into the guard, sending him flying against the stone wall. Run! We sprint down the hall toward where the guard lies limp. Put him in here, I hiss, forcing open the next door, the one that belongs to one of my mother's undersecretaries. Liam and Riddick haul the guard in, and I put my fingers to his neck. Good strong pulse. He just knocked him out. Open his mouth. I snag the vial hidden in the pocket of my leathers, uncork it, and then let the tonic flow into the guard's mouth. He'll sleep the rest of the night. Liam's wide eyes meet mine. You're kind of terrifying. Thank you, I grin, and we get out of there running as fast as we can. 15 minutes later, our chests are still heaving as we skid into the battle brief room, just under the clock. We're the last to arrive, and the tick of Dane's jaw from where he sits in the top row with the other leadership tells me we're going to get an earful about it. I drag my gaze away, and we find our seats as presentations begin in order of squad, giving us enough time to recover from our sprinting session before we have to take the stage. A squad in first wing stole Kaori's handwritten manual on the personal habits and flaws of all active dragons. Impressive. A squad in second wing elicits an appreciative murmur when they reveal the uniform of one of the infantry professors, fully intact with something riders never bear, a name tag. That would grant any enemy access to our outposts,
given the rank on the shoulder. Third Wing's best offering is a stunned, wide-eyed scribe, stolen straight from his bed, and given the way his mouth isn't moving, yep, someone's signet power takes away speech, the poor thing is going to be traumatized when they finally let him go. When it's our turn to take the stage, Sawyer and Liam, the two tallest in our squad, hold the top corners of our map so it's visible to all as it unrolls. I stand back next to Imogen and search the leadership for a certain pair of onyx eyes. There he is. Zayden is leaning against the wall near the other wing leaders, watching me with a pulse-quickening mix of curiosity and expectation.
It was your idea, Imogen whispers, nudging me forward. Present.
Markham's eyes flare wide as saucers as he forces himself to stand, followed quickly by De Vera, whose mouth hangs so wide it's almost comical. I clear my throat and gesture to the map. We have brought the ultimate weapon for our enemies. An up-to-date map of all current outposts of Navarian Wings, to include troop strength of infantry battlements. I point to the forts along the Signesan border, as well as the locations of all current skirmishes in the last 30 days, including last night. A murmur rips through the quadrant.
And how do we know this map is, in fact, current? Kaori asks, holding his reclaimed journal under one arm.
There's no stopping the smile that spreads across my face. Because we stole it from General Sorengale's office. Absolute mayhem breaks out, some of the riders rushing the stage as professors battle their way toward us. But I ignore it all as Zayden tilts one corner of that beautiful mouth and tips an imaginary hat to me, bowing his head for a heartbeat before bringing his gaze back to hold mine. Satisfaction fills every ounce of my being as I smile up at him. It doesn't matter how the vote comes down. I've already won.
Chapter 26. A quote from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
There is no stronger bond than that between two mated dragons. It goes beyond the depth of human love or adoration to a primal, undeniable requirement for proximity. One cannot survive without the other. Flying for short distances is something I manage. Flight maneuvers, the dips and dives that come with combat formations, send me spinning through the sky, unless Terran holds me on with bands of his own power. But flying for 6 hours straight for our prize, a week-long tour of a forward outpost, might just be the death of me. I'm pretty sure I'm dying, Nadine bends over, bracing her hands on her knees. I feel that. Every vertebra in my spine screams as I stretch, and the hands that were freezing only a few minutes ago start to sweat inside my leather gloves. Naturally, Dane is minimally affected, his posture only slightly stiff as he and Professor De Vera greet a tall man in rider black, who I assume is the outpost commander.
Welcome, cadets, the commander says with a professional smile, folding his arms across the chest of his lightweight leathers.
His salt and pepper hair makes it hard to determine his age. And he has that gaunt, weathered look all riders get when they've been stationed on the border for too long.
I'm sure you'd all like to get settled and into something a little more appropriate for the climate. Then we'll show you around Montserrat.
Rhiannon inhales sharply, her gaze sweeping over the mountains.
You all right?
She nods.
Later.
Later arrives in exactly 12 sweat-soaked minutes as we're shown to our double-occupancy barracks rooms. They're sparse, only furnished with two beds, two wardrobes, and a single desk under a wide window. She's quiet the entire time we make our way through the bathing chamber to wash off the ride, and alarmingly silent while we dress in our summer leathers. It may only be April here at Montserrat, but it feels like Bezgaeth in June.
You going to tell me what's up? I ask, stowing my pack beneath the bed before making sure all my daggers are where they're supposed to be. The hilts are barely visible in the sheaths I wear at my thighs, but I doubt many people this far east would recognize the Tirish symbols. Rhiannon's hands tremble with what looks like nervous energy as she straps her sword to her back. Do you know where we are? I mentally bring up a map. We're about 200 miles from the coast. My village is less than an hour away on foot. Her eyes meet mine in an unspoken plea. So much emotion swirling in their dark brown depths that my throat clogs, choking my words. Taking her hands in mine, I squeeze, nodding. I know exactly what she's asking and exactly what it will cost if we're caught. Don't tell anyone, I whisper, even though it's just us in the tiny room. We have 6 days to figure it out, and we will. It's a promise, and we both know it. Someone pounds on our door. Let's go, second squad. Dane. 9 months ago, I would have relished this time away with him. Now I find myself avoiding his constant expectations of me, or just avoiding him in general. Funny how much can change in such a short time. We join the others, and Major Quaid gives us the grand tour of the outpost. My stomach growls, but I ignore it, taking in the hectic energy of the base. The fortress is basically four massive walls, filled with barracks and various chambers with turrets on each corner, and a large arched entrance that boasts a spiked portcullis that looks ready to drop at any second. On one end of the courtyard, there's a stable with a blacksmith and armory for the company of infantry stationed here. And on the other is the dining hall. As you can see, Major Quaid tells us as we stand in the middle of the muddy courtyard, we're built for siege. In the event of attack, we can feed and house everyone within for an adequate amount of time. Adequate? Riddick mouths, lifting his brows. I press my lips together to keep from laughing, and Dane gives him a look that promises retribution from where he stands beside me. My smile falls away. As one of the eastern outposts, we have a full 12 riders stationed here. 3 are out on patrol now, 3 wait, standing by in case they're needed, and the other 6 are in various stages of rest. Quaid continues. What is that look for? Dane whispers. What look? I ask, as the distinct roar of a dragon echoes off the stone walls. That should be one of our patrols returning now, Quaid says, smiling like he wants to mean it, but can't quite find the energy. The one where someone just sucked the joy out of your world, Dane responds, bending his head slightly and keeping his voice low enough that only I can hear him. I could lie to him, but that would make our semi-truce even more awkward. I was just remembering the guy I used to climb trees with, that's all. He startles like I've slapped him. So, we'll get you riders fed and put to bed, and then we'll work on who you'll be shadowing while you're here. Quaid continues. Will we get to participate in any active scenarios? Heaton asks, practically vibrating with excitement. Absolutely not, Devera snaps. If you see combat, then I've failed, as this being the safest place on the border to send you, Quaid answers. But you get bonus points for enthusiasm. Let me guess, 3rd year? Heaton nods. Quaid turns slightly and smiles at 3 indistinct figures in rider black as they walk under the portcullis. There they are now. Why don't you 3 come and meet Violet? My head whips toward the gate, and my heart combusts in a series of erratic beats that leaves me clutching my chest with the best kind of shock. No way. There's no way. I stumble for the gate, forgetting to be stoic, to be emotionally untouchable, as she breaks into a run, her arms opening just before we collide. She sweeps me up, yanking me against her chest and squeezing tight. She smells like dirt and dragon and the coppery tang of blood, but I don't care. I hug her back just as hard. Mira! I bury my face against her shoulder, and my eyes burn as she rests her hand on top of the very braid she taught me how to do. It's as if the weight of everything that's happened over the last 9 months comes crashing down, slamming into me with the force of a crossbolt. The wind of the parapet, the look in Zayden's eyes when he realized I was a Sorengail, the sound of Jack swearing he'd kill me, the smell of burning flesh that first day, the look on Aurelie's face when she fell from the gauntlet, Pryor and Luca and Trina and Tynan, Orin and Amber Mavis, Tairn and Andarna choosing me, Zayden kissing me, our mother ignoring me. Mira pulls me back just long enough to look me over, as if she's checking for damage. You're all right, she nods, her teeth digging into her bottom lip. You're all right, aren't you? I nod, but she blurs in my vision because I might be alive, thriving even, but I'm not the same person she left at the base of that turret. And from the heaviness in her eyes, she knows it too. Yeah, she whispers, tucking me in tight again. You're all right, Violet. You're all right. If she says it enough times, I might start to believe her. Are you? I jerk back to study her. There's a new scar that stretches from her earlobe to her collarbone. Gods, Mira. I'm fine, she promises, then grins. And look at you! You didn't die! Irrational, giddy laughter bubbles up. I didn't die! You're not an only child! We both burst into laughter, and tears track down my cheeks. Sorengails are weird, I hear Imogen state. You have no idea, Dane answers. But when I turn to look, his lips are curved into the first genuine smile I've seen from him in months. Shut up, Atos, Mira barks, throwing her arm over my shoulder. Catch me up on everything, Violet.